Four seasons have we trudged this barren waste, and stood long vigils in the depth of night. Thy search is proving fruitless, mighty liege. To journey on will not resolve thy plight. Please, ye dread lord, what signs or visions tell that speed us on this journey without rest? What fancies from imagination's well would have thee wear an S upon thy chest? Enough, O sad and unenlightened souls, had you the dreams? Had you the light of truth? Heard you the whispering of wisdom's heart, clear visions of great heroes in the sky? Thy sovereign hath and will pursue these signs. Resolve thyself to persevering wind and fasting in the direst, darkest caves. Our search for comic fists and odd-shaped die will not be checked by villains, fools, or knaves. Aye, Majesty, or beg pardon, Majesty.
Welcome. Welcome all, and thank you so much for tuning in to Shakespeare Tonight. I'm Anam 5, and that film clip, of course, you'll recognize from the recent hit film King Mordecai of Thoth, the first, I'm sure, of many cinematic works that will be devoted to the newly discovered play by William Shakespeare. With me here in the studio, we are fortunate enough to have with us Dr. Archibald Fawkes-Bendibus, Professor of Elizabethan Studies at St. Mungo University in Dorset, and a penultimate authority on this new addition to the folio. Thank you for joining us, Doctor.
My pleasure, Adam.
Doctor, you were the consultant on this film, as some of our viewers may know, so I wonder what insights you can share with us on that clip we saw just now.
Of course. Well, that was very early in the play, as you may know. But, of course, he's already begun to have his dreams.
King Mordecai?
King Mordecai has already begun to have his dreams of comics, superheroes, and gaming dice. The beginning of his transformation, too, is evidenced by the fact that he's put Superman's S on his chest. And, of course, it's all pretty much downhill for him from that point.
I notice, too, that his close servants and advisers seem under a bit of a strain as well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, without question. Everyone, from his high court down to his subjects, have had the burden of humouring him from the very opening of the work. I mean, the play begins with the ravings of the king in his bedchamber. Fistful of comics and games, fistful of comics and games, etc., which draws his people into the tragic journey he must take. And it is tragic, you see, because he has those closest to him, out and about, in the outskirts of his kingdoms, searching with him for the source of his dreams, as if it were a tangible thing, as if the source were a physical place. And while they question him, they still respect his office as king, but are just forced to watch his deterioration. So while we, as the audience, can identify with Mordecai, we can also empathize with his followers. The richness of emotion in this work is astonishing.
Superb progression to that journey, too. I mean, it comes on him so gradually, even as he tries to find his answer.
Absolutely. Very true.
You've seen this next clip. What can you tell us about it?
In this segment, Mordecai is becoming more and more unglued, but he is still shown the sanity and good judgment to be persuaded by his people to seek the advice of the wise man.
The dream interpreter?
Yes, he's told him all that he's seen in his dreams and visions, and sends him off, then, of course, sends back for him to get his answer. But, of course, as he waits, we get further pathos in that small encounter with the queen, who's trying to get him to wear normal royal clothing again.
Yes, he's quite the spectacle by this point, isn't he?
Oh, absolutely. He's taken elements from all the superheroes that he's dreamed about, and with constant instructions to his tailors, applies them to this costume he now wears. Emblems, belts, lariats, lanterns, anything he can remember. And the most shocking and telling evidence that he's reached the mental precipice and is falling over it is that he's stopped wearing his crown and begun wearing a mask.
Let's run the clip and watch for it.
Suffer the wise man to come before us. though lounging in his tent, or coiled in sleep, or tranced in arcane visions, we care not. If he hath failed to sound these visions deep, then from him we shall beat 12 kinds of snot. Aye, Majesty, the wise man, bring him now.
Rouse him perforce, and bring him with all haste.
We shall now take repose within our tent.
Good husband, may I bring thee garments fair to clothe thee for thy self-imposed task? Why would our gracious sovereign still forswear his grandsire's crown in favor of a mask? Long knives and spidery threads bound to thy wrist? Fine robes and satins should thy body drape. Tight silk will make ye shiver in the mist. Why sport thee so in stockings, boots, and cape?
'Tis not the coinage of a fevered brain, nor yet a potent sign of wandering wit. We dress thus as the vanquisher of pain, and all who scorn are frankly full of...
Please you, my king, the wise man waits without.
There, you see, he's not all that convinced that the wise man will have anything useful to say to him. And he tries to convince his queen, just as he's convinced himself, that he's still perfectly sane. And it's the rest of the world that's out of step.
Doctor, I must know your opinion on this. And I know this will have Shakespearean scholars arguing for decades, but... is it Wolverine's mask?
You know, I'm really still open on that question. I mean, he has those pathetic knives strapped to his wrist and all, but we must remember the mask is just a symbol, you see. I mean, he's given up the symbol of his real and earthly power, the crown, for the mask, whomever it belongs to. The mask, which is a symbol of power in his dreams. That's the point to bear in mind. I mean, it could be Wolverine's, that's the popular interpretation, as you saw in the clip, but it could be Batman's, could be Spider-Man's, or the Green Lantern's, for all that. The significance of the exchange of the crown for the mask is what matters to the play overall.
Fair enough, fair enough. Well, very quickly, let's run this next clip. I'd love to get them all shown. Now, this is the part where he has his interpretation and prophecy.
Oh, yes, he has the fateful encounter with the wise man and the truth. Extremely powerful scene.
Now, learned one, thou hath our dreams been told. No secrets of our visions, all revealed. Of flying men and busty women bold, of rolling dice and mortal wounds, all healed. And at the heart of these so vivid dreams, a clenched fist with comics and with games, skillfully wrought discussions brightly gleams from scholars wise. I almost hear their names. Shall we seek out the fountain of these sights? Continue to the edges of the world, or quit the task, resolved of sleepless nights while others snooze in peace, old cares unfurled. I charge thee, speak.
Have patience, noble son. The dreams of my most gracious lord and king spring from a world where poets' pens paint bold, where superheroes daily justice bring, and mirror thy ancestral blood of old. And if these marvels were not fuel enough to stoke thy mental fires, yet there is more. Thy roles make legends live through weekly stuff of games that build their ever-changing lore.
Hasten us to know the hidden place, that we may join these heroes in their fight, to swing the deadly snout into the face of evil villains dead before our might.
Can we freeze that there? Can we bring up that one frame? Excellent. Doctor, look at the mad gleam in those eyes. Just marvellous work by Cecil Prawn for that scene.
Oh, without question. He did a masterful job of capturing and really internalising Mordecai's utter desperation to plunge into this other world and become a superhero. Any superhero. It was this kind of performance that earned him the nomination, along with that shattering scene toward the end when he's crawling along the ground and picking up pebbles and shaking them, throwing them and staring at them to see the numbers. Absolute cinema magic, but I suppose we get ahead of ourselves here.
Yeah, sorry, back to the clip. And this, the final segment we'll see today. We now hear the wise man's final truth about the dreams, not coming from this world, but in fact from the Internet. And then that warning to the king about what's going to happen to him if he keeps dressing like a collection of superheroes from the comics. Roll that one, please. Thank you.
This world lies not within thy bordered land, nor yet on shores where oceans wane and ebb. To sweep creation with thy desperate hand will find it not. It dwells upon the web.
Upon the web? Of course it must be so, for in our dreams 3 W's did grow.
Go, you great king, to thy computer box. Fist full of comics, enter with thy keys. Thus from all mystery shall ye tear the locks. That page revealed shall set thy mind at ease.
We thank thee, wise one, mystical and great. And now with puzzle solved we'll meet our fate.
A warning, sire, lest thee like X-Men dress, or deck thee as ye do in tights and cape. In thy dominion costumes, I confess, make one look less a man and more an ape. This hero fashion that thy dreams inspire, becoming more outlandish week by week, should be most retrograde to thy desire. For wagging tongues shall title thee a geek.
A geek we are, and thus we shall remain. Thrice damned is he that prattles of our state. A figo for pale policy and pain to all who are as low as we are great. Come away.
Marvellous. Simply marvellous. Doctor, your thoughts?
Oh, the brilliance of Shakespeare culminates in this particular scene. Just as in his other works, his hero has leapt from the precipice of sanity as if escaping from perdition itself, and shouts triumphant even as he's plummeting to his doom.
But what of the wise man's advice about costumes? I mean, it's every bit as true today as it was in Shakespeare's time. All too often, the man that tries to dress like a superhero from a film or a comic just ends up looking quite silly. That romantic visual ideal is just not achievable in thy dominion, as the wise man puts it. Why do you suppose King Mordecai brushes it aside? Why wouldn't he listen?
Well, he might have done, but for that flaw that Shakespeare gave him, you see. This mad desire to be the vanquisher of pain, along with this sorely unbalanced empowerment of his dream world. And yet we see that tiniest kernel of the original sane king in that touching, illuminating line, "A geek we are, and thus we shall remain." He knows what he's become. But rather than shrink away from it, he embraces it whole and essentially tells the rest of the world to bugger off. Perhaps that's the part of the king that Shakespeare wanted to awaken in his audience. He cared not a fig for pale policy, as he puts it. Be strong in your convictions and follow your dreams. His tragedy is he didn't know where they actually were, and when he was told, he didn't go.
To www.fistfulofcomics.com.
Precisely. But there, in that scene, near the end, he's got a new luster in his eye, that of a man that has completed a very difficult passage. And so we admire him for his conviction, we applaud the accomplishment of his journey, we fear for his sanity and fate, and we cry for his inability to stop short of madness.
Well, I don't think we could end with a better summary. Dr. Fork Bendibus, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you with us here today. Thank you so much.
Not at all. Thank you for having me.
King Mordecai of Thoth will be playing throughout the remainder of the summer, and surely it will be in a cinema near you. I urge you to bring family and friends to this marvelous, marvelous film. I'm Adam Five, and thank you all for watching Shakespeare Tonight. Bye-bye for now.
Fistful of Comics and Games. Lucky for us, it isn't Shakespeare. Just a whole lot of fun.